Welcome back to Sferio, the local voice of our hemisphere. WMBR 88.1, WMBR Cambridge. And right now we're going to hear some news by Froy. Froy, here you can go ahead.
Let's start. So News Corp Chair Robert Murdoch has offered a limited apology for a New York Post cartoon that critics say depicts President Obama as a chimpanzee. The cartoon shows a white police officer shooting dead a chimpanzee in the street. His partner, another white officer, says they'll have to find someone else to write the next stimulus bill. African-American leaders have called for a boycott of the New York Post and the firing of cartoonist Sean DeLonas and editor-in-chief Cole Allen. In a statement, Murdoch said, "Today I want to personally apologize to any reader who felt offended and even insulted. It was not meant to be racist, but unfortunately it was interpreted by many as such. I promise you that we will seek to be more attuned to the sensitivities of our community." En español, el presidente de News Corp, Rupert Murdoch, ofreció una disculpa limitada por la publicación en el New York Post de una caricatura que, según los críticos, representa al presidente Obama como un chimpancé. Esta caricatura muestra a un oficial de la policía blanco matando a balazos a un chimpancé en la calle. Su compañero, otro oficial blanco, dice, tendrán que encontrar a alguien más que escriba el próximo proyecto de ley de estímulos económicos. Los líderes afroestadounidenses pidieron que se boicoteara al New York Post y que se destituyera al dibujante Sean DeLonas y al editor en jefe Cole Allen. En una declaración, Murdoch dijo, "Hoy quiero disculparme personalmente con todos los lectores que se hayan sentido ofendidos o incluso insultados. No fue hecho con la intención de ser racista, pero lamentablemente fue interpretado así por muchos. Les prometo que intentaremos estar en mayor consonancia con la sensibilidad de nuestra comunidad." On another news, in California, a state legislator has introduced a bill to legalize the sale of marijuana. Assemblyman Tom Amiano says the measure will generate over $1 billion amidst California's budget woes. En California, un legislador estatal presentó un proyecto de ley para legalizar la venta de la marihuana. El legislador Tom Amiano dice que esta medida generaría más de $1 billion para mejorar los problemas presupuestarios de California. And the Supreme Court has dealt a setback to indigenous land claims in the U.S. On Tuesday, the court limited the government's authority to hold land in trust for Native American tribes. Several states have sought the ruling to be able to impose greater control of development on indigenous lands. La Corte Suprema de los Estados Unidos le propinó un golpe a los reclamos de tierra de los indígenas aquí, en los Estados Unidos. El martes, la Corte limitó la autoridad del gobierno para mantener tierras en fideicomiso para las tribus de indígenas estadounidenses. Varios estados habían intentado obtener este fallo para poder imponer un mayor control sobre el desarrollo de las tierras indígenas. And more, maybe US-related news, another attorney for Guantanamo Bay prisoners is claiming conditions have worsened sharply since President Obama took office. Ahmed Hapur says Guantanamo guards are acting even more aggressively before Obama's year-long deadline to shut the prison down. Hapur said he's heard recent accounts of beatings, the dislocation of limbs, spraying of pepper spray into closed cells, applying pepper spray to toilet paper, and over-force feeding, hunger-striking prisoners. Other attorneys, including military lawyer Yvonne Bradley, have made similar claims since Obama ordered Guantanamo's closure. Otro abogado de los prisioneros de la Bahía de Guantánamo sostiene que las condiciones han empeorado drásticamente desde que el presidente Obama asumió el poder. Ahmed Hapur dice que los guardias de Guantánamo están actuando de forma aún más agresiva luego de que Obama estableció un plazo límite de un año para cerrar la prisión. Hapur dice que escuchó relatos recientes de golpizas de dislocación de extremidades, de que se rociaron celdas cerradas con gas de pimienta, se colocó gas de pimienta en el papel higiénico y se sobrealimentó a la fuerza a los prisioneros en huelga de hambre. Otros abogados, entre los que se encuentra la abogada militar Yvonne Bradley, han hecho acusaciones similares desde que Obama ordenó el cierre de Guantánamo. And one last piece of news. The CIA director Leon Panetta has revealed the global financial crisis is now being tracked in the daily intelligence briefing prepared for President Obama. In his first news conference, Panetta said Obama is being briefed on how the financial crisis is unfolding and its effect on the stability of countries worldwide. Earlier this month, National Intelligence Director Dennis Blair said economic troubles have surpassed terrorism as the nation's top security threat. Panetta also says Latin American intelligence officials have warned the U.S. of a crisis spreading through the hemisphere. The officials highlighted developments in Argentina, Ecuador, and Venezuela, Panetta said. Leon Panetta, director de la CIA, reveló que la crisis financiera mundial es objeto de seguimiento en los informes diarios de inteligencia preparados para el presidente Obama. En su primera conferencia de prensa, Panetta dijo que Obama está siendo informado sobre el desarrollo de la crisis financiera y sus efectos en la estabilidad de los países del mundo. Este mes, el director nacional de inteligencia, Dennis Blair, dijo que los problemas económicos han superado al terrorismo y se han convertido en la amenaza, en la principal amenaza de la seguridad nacional. Panetta también sostiene que funcionarios de inteligencia latinoamericanos han advertido a los Estados Unidos que la crisis se está extendiendo por todo el hemisferio. Según Panetta, los funcionarios destacaron en particular las situaciones de Argentina, Ecuador y Venezuela. And those are some of the news of this week in, here in Sferio.
Thank you, Freud. Now we are going to listen to some song. Oh, and during the music break, we got a new guest. Her name is Jacinda, right? Is that right? And she's going to join us when we are going to talk about Habitat for Humanity. And after this song, we are going to listen to Grace and Jacinda talking about Habitat for Humanity. So stay tuned. The song that we're going to listen to right now is called Waka Shinga. And it's by this Zimbabwean artist. Her name is Chioniso. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that wrong, but the song is really upbeat, I think. So, okay, we'll talk to you guys soon. Jotoda wakashinga, jotoda wakangwarira, jotoda wakashinga, wakashinga, jotoda wakashinga, jotoda wakangwarira, jotoda wakashinga. Thank you. Hi, welcome back to Spirio. We are here in Cambridge, WMBR, and today we are joined with our guests, Grace Lee and Jacinda, and they're going to talk to us about Habitat for Humanity. So now I'm going to turn over the mic to them, and you guys can introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about what the Habitat is and the work that you guys have been doing.
Great, thanks. I'm Grace. I'm a junior at MIT, and I'm the president of our Habitat for Humanity Club. And this is Jacinda.
Hi, I'm Jacinda, and I'm a junior at MIT as well, and I'm the coordinator for this year's spring break trip to Eustis, Florida.
Cool. And we'll talk about that more in a few minutes, but we figured we'd start with a general description of what Habitat for Humanity is as a general organization. So Habitat for Humanity International is the umbrella group that sort of ties all of the local Habitat for Humanity regional affiliates together. And each of the regional affiliates are responsible for collecting money and building houses for local families. So, for example, here in Massachusetts, we have a lot of local affiliates. Like, we have one in Boston, we have one in Lowell. There's one also in Merrimack Valley that does a lot of building in Lawrence, and a lot of other affiliates in Massachusetts. And so each affiliate, what they do, the basic process is they look for land that gets donated to them by, like, the city, by the government, by people who happen to, like, own that plot of land or own, like, a house that needs to be renovated. And so a lot of times they'll get the land donated to them, and then they'll study the land and see what sort of house they can build on it. And then they'll put out a call for applications, and families with low income can apply to Habitat and explain their need and explain why they need the house and why they think they deserve a Habitat for Humanity home. And they field all of these applications, and they're trying to find the one family that would be perfect for this home, not only in terms of whether they can actually pay for it and whether they actually need it, but also in terms of whether that house is perfect for them. Like, some of the houses would be bigger than the others just based on, like, whether they're renovating a house or whether they're getting land donated. So they try and find a family that'll fit the house. So it's a great organization. That one of their mottos is that it's a hand up, not a hand out, because it's not that they're giving out, they're just giving out free houses to people. They're helping people by giving them, I believe it's a 30-year mortgage with no interest. And
wow.
Yeah. I know, especially nowadays, right? But it's not a free house by any means. It's for families that are working and that, or are searching for jobs and that have little children to take care of, that they're trying to help in particular. And it's a great organization. It was founded in the 70s, by a guy named Millard Fuller, I believe. And he built the first Habitat home in Atlanta, Georgia. And since then, it's expanded worldwide. They've built 300,000 houses since then, in about the three decades since then. And those houses have housed about 1.5 million people already.
So who are the people that are building the houses? Are they just random volunteers, or do they hire certain people to do that job?
Well, each regional affiliate has an executive director and a couple of site supervisors, and so they're hired people, and they get paid a small fee to do their job. But the rest of the people, most of the people who do the brunt of the work, are volunteers. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, what a lot of the affiliates will do is they'll get donations from local companies. So, like, for example, Habitat for Humanity of Greater Lowell does a lot of work with Cisco. So Cisco will donate money, but they'll also donate volunteers. So they'll pay some of their employees to come on, like, a Tuesday or something and work on the house for several hours. So they get a lot of volunteers that way.
And in addition to that, the families who are actually going to live in the house are required to put in what's called sweat equity. They have to put in a certain number of hours of work on the house, usually between 150 to 200 per person. In order to earn the house, in addition to the mortgage. So, again, it's not a handout. It's really helping these people. And you can see that they're really investing themselves in this house, and it's really something that will help them.
I had a quick question. So maybe you said this, but how long has Habitat for Humanity existed? And do you know what the, like, rate of people paying back the loans is, or if it's really successful?
So Habitat started in the 70s, I think 1976. I'm not quite sure what the number is for people who, whether they can pay back their loans or not. From just conversations that I've had with local affiliates, it seems pretty successful. Like, the local affiliates, is not like they just give them the house and expect to get the payments. They follow up with them very extensively, and they check to make sure that they're able to make their payments. So, but from my experience and from the conversations that I've had, it seems to be pretty successful.
So I heard that there are a lot of student volunteers who go to the site and help out with building. But I feel like the student volunteers wouldn't have, you know, experience in building homes or carpentering or anything like that. So how are they able to help out?
Well, so that's one of the main things that the Habitat for Humanity Club does here at MIT. We have monthly build days where one Saturday a month we'll send about 16 volunteers to a local build site. And like you said, like no experience is required. Basically, the stuff that we're doing is stuff like painting and like digging trenches that we can lay like plumbing pipes down. Stuff that that you don't really need to be taught how to do. And if there's like a skill that you need to learn how to do, such as like putting up insulation or such as building window frames or something, then they can teach us how to do that right on site. It's really great how you can just sort of like pick up and go and just sort of show up with nothing, and they take care of you and they show you how to do everything. And it's fantastic because the amount of work that a group of people can do in just 8 hours is unbelievable. We the group that went to one of the builds in February. So one of the houses that we've been coming to every month since they started working on it in about October, the Habitat for Humanity of Greater Lowell has been renovating this old farmhouse in Bedford. And it was really great because the city donated the land to them. And so they donated them the farmhouse as well as like the few acres of land that it sits on. So their plan right now is to renovate the farmhouse and to build like a little cul-de-sac of about four or five other houses on that land. So right now we've been renovating the farmhouse, and it's great because people who have been coming with us every month can see the sort of transformation of the house from when we have to like tear down some of the old walls, and now some new walls are being put up, and we just put up the insulation on the outside, and we were able to cover almost half the house in insulation in just one day. It was unbelievable, and it's a huge house, and it's going to be gorgeous.
So other than building houses, are there other initiatives that Habitat for Humanity is taking?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that they do is they host Collegiate Challenge every year, where college and high school students can come and work with an affiliate for a full week during their spring break. Now, like you said, a lot of people who only go once a month or something like that may not have the skills. With a full week, they can teach you things at the beginning of the week so that each of you can get really successful. And it's great because as a whole group, you're going and you're just spending 8 hours a day for 5 days helping these families, and you get so much accomplished that you wouldn't think could be possible in a week. And you get to meet other college students from around the nation and around the globe who are coming to help build these homes. You form a great community, and you get to meet the kids, the families, and see exactly what's going on.
Yeah, and I was in a Habitat for Humanity project in Costa Rica for exactly 1 week. And, yeah, it was really rewarding. Sorry. And when you stay there for a whole week instead of just one day, you kind of see how the building progresses and how you get more and more efficient after each day and how you just kind of like an understanding of it. And it was really rewarding experience for me. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, have you guys actually been on the site and built a house? Like, the trip that you mentioned, have you actually been on the trip personally?
I went on the trip that we had last year. It's an annual spring break trip that we have. Last year, we went to Bogalusa, Louisiana, which is about an hour north of New Orleans. So unfortunately, it was sort of overlooked in all of the Katrina rescue efforts because it was far enough away that most of the damage was wind damage, and most of the people donated their money towards like New Orleans and the immediate area around it. So it was unbelievable because it had been, I think it was 3 years or so since Katrina, and you could still drive through Bogalusa and see houses with roofs just torn in and just a tarp sort of thrown over it. And like there were still a few of the FEMA trailers still in the yards, and I was just blown away because I thought that we'd be just working on normal houses, like not even houses that were affected by Hurricane Katrina, because I just figured it was so long ago. But the houses that we were working on were all houses that had sustained either flood damage or wind damage from Hurricane Katrina. And it was great. It was a fabulous experience, not just because of the community service aspect of it, but also in terms of just getting away from the incredibly intense atmosphere of MIT. That's what I heard just from talking to all the other volunteers on the trip. Everybody was just so happy to be able to get away, go someplace warm, just be able to dedicate all of your time and effort into just manually working on this house instead of having to, you know, do piece sets and study for exams. It was a great escape for all of us.
And this year, we'll be going to Eustis, Florida, which is a small town in the middle of Florida, about an hour south of Orlando. And the affiliate there built 14 homes last year, and we'll be helping them build some of the new homes in the area. They're in a particularly lower-income region of Florida, between two of the poorer counties in the area.
You're listening to WMBR, Cambridge. We are the local voice of our hemisphere, Spirio, and right now we are talking to Grace Lee and Jacinda. What's your last name?
Shelley.
Shelley, Jacinda Shelley. And we were just talking about the Habitat for Humanity here at MIT. If you guys have any questions, you guys could call us at 617-253-8810 in French, Spanish, English, and Portuguese.
And Korean.
So, yeah, feel free to call us with any questions that you have. So I'm just wondering, how are you guys, like, involved? How did you guys start to get involved in this project?
Well, in the spring break trip, Grace sent out an email to the list last year and asked if there were any volunteers who would like to help coordinate it or help with other exec board positions. And I'd organized a lot of stuff in the past and heard about Habitat for Humanity and really wanted to get involved, so I figured I'd jump right in and do something really meaningful, and that's how I got involved here at MIT.
So this is a new chapter at MIT. It was founded last year?
No, it was founded, I believe, at least 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's been around for a while. We've been doing these build days for a while. The spring break trip, I think we've done at least several times in the past. Let me see. But the way that I got started was, at the beginning of last year, I decided to go on one of the monthly build days just to see what it would be like and to see if I could handle it. And I loved it. And so I started to get more and more involved in the organization. And so when the co-presidents from last year graduated, they sort of nudged me and said, if you want to take this under your wing, then go for it. So I did. And we're trying to do a lot of new initiatives this year. We're really trying to boost awareness of not only our club, but also of the purpose of Habitat for Humanity on campus, because there really is an incredible need for affordable housing, especially in the United States. Like, a lot of people think about, like, the stuff that Habitat does internationally, but I mean, if you just look at some of the work sites that we work in, just like right in Massachusetts, like, it's unbelievable how much need there is for just houses that low-income families can afford to live in. So we planned a few large events for this spring semester. We have a benefit concert coming up tonight at 8 p.m. in 10 to 50. Several groups have graciously agreed to perform for us. It's Amobalari, which is a breakdancing group, Swara, which is an Indian musical group, Resonance, and Cross Products, which are both a cappella groups. And so tickets will be $8 at the door, and all of the proceeds are going to go towards sponsoring a local Habitat home. So the homes that I was talking about that the affiliates build, it costs them about $60,000. Well, in order to sponsor a home, it costs about $60,000. The affiliate then matches the $60,000, and it costs about $120,000 total for the entire house. So we're trying to save up some money so that we can at least donate around $10,000 so that we can contribute a little bit to our community. We'd really love to give back.
So I was just wondering how, because I have no sense of how much a house costs here in the United States. So how much are we talking about? $120,000, is that enough to build a house? Well, that will depend. We're in the United States, right?
Yes, definitely. But for houses around this area, they do it for around $120,000. I don't know off the top of my head how much they make the families pay for the houses, but I believe it's definitely lower than market value.
And also, what does it mean to be a sponsor? I heard that you mentioned $60,000 from a sponsorship, but what does sponsorship mean?
It basically means that you're the company or you're the group that really funded the house. It's more of a way to to sort of give back to your community and be able to show people, like, look, this is what we're doing to do our part and help, instead of, you know, I think that's what a lot of companies do. A lot of the sponsors of Habitat, like I mentioned Cisco before, like, in order to show that, like, they're not just amassing profits, they're, you know, they're giving it back to the community.
I just wanted to let people know, if there's people listening that are from outside the MIT community but are still interested in coming to the concert, it's open to everyone, right? It's open to the public.
Yes, it is.
So everyone should go. Well, if you want, you could come. And it's in 10250, which is a building on the second floor by the big dome of MIT. So if you, like, Google it or something, you can find where that is.
You mentioned earlier that Habitat for Humanity buys the land, or has the land donated, mm-hmm. and you start building houses on it. Mm-hmm. So it must be like a huge empty space, and you're like building sort of like a village or community. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how that's all integrated, like how when everyone moves in, people are, I guess, able to be good neighbors, and like, how do you create that community? Because like, building a house isn't just about living there, but also, you know, knowing your neighbors and being in the community. So is there like an action that Habitat for Humanity takes to solve that problem?
I think they take that into account when they're looking for the families that are gonna be living in these houses, because they find one family per house. It's not like they have like a long list of families, and just as they finish the houses, they give them to the families. So like, I guess if there's a community that they're building and there's several families that have small children, then they might all put them together so that the children can play. Another sort of community building aspect of it, like Jacinta mentioned, is that a lot of the families come and help and work at the houses. So on the spring break trip last year in Bogalusa, we were working on a cul-de-sac of 6 houses, and there they purposely did it so that they would finish all the houses at the same time, so that the families could not only work on the houses together and meet each other in that respect, but also they could all be moving in together at the same time. And so that sort of helped to unify the community.
Right.
I hope that answered your question.
And yeah. Actually, in the affiliate in Florida that we're going to visit, they require that before you can start building sweat equity in your own house, so working to help build your own house, you have to spend at least 40 hours working on other houses that the Habitat community is, that the Habitat affiliate is building in that area. So that really helps new Habitat new Habitat families learn about the other families that are that they're going to meet in these communities.
Mm-hmm. Is this only in the U.S.?
Oh, no, it's international, so mm-hmm. there's quite a few affiliates abroad. Actually, it's interesting. The affiliates that are in the United States, and I believe maybe Europe as well, with the amount of money that they raise, they have to give a 10% tithe to an international affiliate that they're partnered with. So I know one of the local affiliates here is partnered with the affiliate in South Africa. So, like, of all the donations that they receive, they give 10% to the people in South Africa. And that's mostly because they receive their donations from just, like, local companies and local individuals. So it's very difficult for people in like, third world countries to raise the amount of money that they need to build the houses. But it's a very interesting spectrum because, I mean, like I said here, a house here costs $60,000 to sponsor, whereas a house in Kenya costs $3,000 to sponsor. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting stratification across the globe about the logistics surrounding the Habitat homes.
Oh, are there issues with, like, I mean, how do you decide when you have that much of a difference between how much it costs to build a home, like, in Kenya and the U.S., say, how do you decide? I mean, I know you're not the one making these decisions, but how do you think people high up in humanity decide where that money would be allocated?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, I know when, so like I said, we're trying to raise money for, to sponsor our own home, and we wanted to do something that was a little bit closer to home because it made it a little bit more meaningful to the students in our community and like the MIT community as a whole. And also if we could sponsor a home, it'd be great to also send volunteers to work on that home and know that they're working on an MIT sponsored home. So there's something to be said about doing something that's very close to where you're familiar with.
Right. And I think that's why they try and divide the money between people who are putting the money into their own local communities, but still being aware of the fact that there's a need for housing in third world countries even more than there is here. So that's what the 10% tithe that Grace mentioned is all about. So you have that balance of local versus helping people who are in even more horrifying circumstances than we are here.
Well, I had two questions. One on the circumstances of people that, who don't have a house here in the United States and maybe outside the United States. And second, just maybe second one is easier to respond. Where is this house that is going to be built here near MIT? Where is it located?
It's pretty much wherever they manage to get land.
So it's not allocated the land yet.
Well, it's land that they can, like, get donated by the city or something. So it's, I mean, the affiliates have to actively search for land. I know that, like, for some it's easier than others just because, like, some affiliates are in places where it's already incredibly populated and it's already really difficult to find land. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, sometimes they'll renovate houses or they'll turn a one-story house into a two-story condo or something. It's pretty much whatever land they can get their hands on. Like, I mean, I know, like, this cul-de-sac that they're starting to build in Bedford, they just had that land available, and the city wanted to do something with it, and so the city just donated it to them. So it's sort of you really have to go out and look for the land for this.
I see. And the second one is, so how do these people who, you know, who get, let's say, handed up their house, where do they live before? Do they have a house before? Were they just renting? Or what sort of situation are these people living before Habitat for Humanity, you know, helps them get a house?
It definitely depends on each family. Sometimes they might be living in a relative's home, but the home is overcrowded because they can't hold another family in their home. Sometimes they might be living in a house that really doesn't have great conditions for them. Like, for example, in Louisiana, like if a house got flooded, then they might be trying to live in that house. And they might just, like, deal with the fact that it's flooded until their new home is complete. I don't believe, as far as I've seen, I don't think many of these families have been living in homeless shelters just because they do need to show that they'll be able to pay the money back. And so most of that population are people who are living in some sort of like apartment or house that just doesn't suit their needs right now.
You're listening to WMBR Cambridge.
So you're listening to Sferio, the local voice of our hemisphere. And we've been listening to some people talk about Habitat for Humanity, an MIT group. And now we're going to listen to some music. It's called Chiclete con Banana. And it's by... I'm not exactly sure who it's by. It's by Gilberto Gil. And so we'll listen to that song right now.
Bebop no meu samba quando o tio Sam pegar no tamborim. Quando ele pegar o pandeiro no zabumba. Quando ele entender que o samba não é rumba, aí eu vou misturar Miami com Copacabana. Chiclete eu misturo com banana. E o meu samba vai ficar assim. Batoqueiro, raro, barco, tiga, papá. Beiro, 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 bam, papá. Beiro, 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 bam, bida. Quero ver a grande confusão. Babanama, ô, é banana, mel. Amarok, é o samba rock, meu irmão. Mas em compensação, quero ver o bugue-ugue de pandeiro e violão. Quero ver o tio Sam de frigideira numa batucada brasileira. Quero ver o tio Sam de frigideira numa batucada brasileira.
Hi, welcome back. The song was really short. We're going to return to the song in a minute, but Jacinda and Grace have to leave soon because their concert is tonight, which is really exciting. And there are some things that they want us to know. So,
okay, so besides the concert tonight, we also have a lot of we also have several other large events coming up. Further off into the future, we have what's called Campus Build. So every year, we invite the local affiliates to tell us if there's anything that we can build right here on campus for them. So, like, a lot of them will have us build walls or decking or or other portable components of houses like window frames that we can build right here on campus, like right next to Kresge Oval, and then they can go transport it back to whatever build sites they need them at. And so it's I really like this event because it's a way to sort of bring Habitat to MIT and let people who don't really have a chance to go out for a full day of building to come and like swing a hammer for a couple of hours. So we're going to be doing that in April. And also this year we're going to do it in conjunction with something that we're calling Shantytown, where basically it's going to be a cardboard house building competition among teams. And we're going to figure we're still working out the details for it, but basically each team of 4 to 5 people is going to be able to get all the cardboard and duct tape that they want, and they're going to be able to spend an entire Friday afternoon and evening building houses. We're working on the competition aspect. We're thinking of maybe like who can build the tallest house or the house that can stand up the longest, or we were thinking of also bringing in pictures of houses that you might find in other countries and then asking them to build houses that look sort of like a house that you might find in Australia or something. So it'll be a fun event, and it'll be tied in with a lot of awareness activities that we've planned. So it's going to be a pretty large event that we have in April. And besides that, we also have another event coming up this weekend.
So tomorrow morning, tomorrow all day, we're going to be having a stare-a-thon up the Green Building to help raise money specifically for the spring break trip. It'll be from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And if you want to fill out some of the paperwork earlier, I'll be there as early as 8 a.m.
Wow, that's early.
On a Saturday, yeah. Yep. We'll be having... And so basically, it works that you climb up as many stairs as you can, and within a week and a half we'll be asking people to bring back the money from their sponsors, who'll pay them like 5 cents or 10 cents for every flight of stairs that they climb. And so people can find sponsors, and you could climb even if you don't find a sponsor, just for fun to try and see. So if you couldn't make the bad ideas competition in IAP, this is a good time to prove your stair climbing ability.
And like, I was wondering, so do people climb like the stairs multiple times, or because it seems like you could go up in it, like you could go up your Green Building stairs in a couple minutes? So like, do people go up and down?
Yep, as many times as they want to or can.
That's awesome.
I don't know if I can go up and down in a couple of minutes, but
well, thanks so much for joining us here today. And if there are people who can't make it to the event but would like to get information about you guys, what should they do?
They should email us at mit-habitat-exec@mit.edu.
Okay, great. Thank you so much,
thanks
Grace
for
and
having
Justin.
Us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
You, yeah. It was really exciting hearing about what Habitat's doing. It's an amazing organization. So.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Now we're going to return to the song just at where we were. So we'll be back.
Miami com Copacabana, chiclete seu misturo com banana, e o meu samba vai ficar assim. Badoguero, nero, ba, ta, ba, 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 be, ba, 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 de, ba, 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 be, ba. Quero ver a grande confusão. Badom, ba, ba, peado, barabu, ba, ba, terom, ba, ba, pe, ba, ba. É o samba rock, meu irmão. Mas em compensação, quero ver o boogie-woogie de pandeiro e violão. Quero ver o Dilson de frigideira numa batucada brasileira. Quero ver o Dilson de frigideira numa batucada brasileira. Vamos lá, Iga. Amababá, bababá, bababá. Quero ver a grande confusão. Bapina, papê. Baba Pio, Mario, é o samba rock, meu irmão. Ah.
Welcome back to Spherio. We are here on WMBR Cambridge. And we just had a wonderful discussion with two friends from, they're now my friends, two friends from the Habitat for Humanity. We are still here, and we have more news and announcements to share with you.
So right now, I think we're going to listen to another song. But we'll come back with you in a few minutes, and we'll have some announcements of various events that are happening around campus, and we'll also have a promo. But so the song we're gonna play is called Vanarapa, and it's by it's on an album.
We always have a trouble with trying to find the singer, but we know the singer. We pick out the right music, but it's just hard for us to find the name. Anyways, her name is Chiwa Niso. We played her songs earlier, and she's actually known as Rebel Woman, which I think is really cool. And like the album cover has this like Native American looking woman standing, and she's like so defiant. So no, it's a really cool music and
here
artist.
We go.
Yes.
where you're not selling fish hooks anymore. You are the free swimming fish.
Bhuliwaji.
Namaste.
Tune into music for human beings.
New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you.
Think that you're gliding out from the face of a cliff like an eagle. Think you're walking like a tiger walks by himself in the forest. You're most handsome when you're after food. Spend less time with nightingales and peacocks. One's just a voice, the other's just a color.
Friday, 7 p.m., WMBR in Cambridge, 88.1 FM.
Welcome back to Sperio, the local voice of our hemisphere on WMBR Cambridge. We're going to hear some announcements now of various events that are going around. So today, Friday, February 27th at 8 p.m., there will be a Salvadoran delegation send-off party at Encuentro 5, 33 Harrison Avenue in Chinatown, sponsored by CISPES, the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador. There will be local music and Salvadoran food. CISPES will also be having a report back and send off on Sunday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at the Democracy Center in Cambridge. There will be light music and refreshments, and you can hear first-hand reports from the January 18th municipal and legislative elections in El Salvador and the current situation there. Hoy, el 25 de viernes febrero, a las 8 de la tarde, habrá una fiesta celebrando las elecciones del Salvador en Encuentro 533 Avenida de Harrison en Chinatown, patrocinando por CISPES, el Comité en Solidaridad con Personas del Salvador. Habrá música local y alimento salvadoreño. También habrá un informe y despedida el domingo, el 1 de marzo a las 7 de la tarde en el Centro de la Democracia en Cambridge. Habrá música y refrescos ligeros. Y puedes oír informes en primera mano de las elecciones municipales y legislativas del 10 y 8 de enero de El Salvador y la situación actual allí. Also today there will be a celebration of the independence of the Dominican Republic called Chicomania from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Breezeway Bar and Grill, 153 Blue Hill Avenue, Roxbury, Massachusetts. Alternatively, you can go to Mojitos from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m., where there will be a free Dominican dinner, live dance celebration, and free salsa lessons. También hoy habrá una celebración de la independencia de la República Dominicana llamado Chicomania de las 10 de la noche a las 2 de la mañana a la Barra y Panilla de Breezeway, 553 Blue Hill Avenue, Roxbury, Massachusetts. Alternativamente, puedes ir a Mojitos de las 9 a las 9 de la noche hasta las 2 de la mañana, donde habrá una cena dominica libre, una celebración viva de baile y clases libres de salsa. And on Tuesday, March 3rd, there will be an event called Gaza Beyond the Headlines, including speakers Noam Chomsky, Duncan Kennedy, and Elise Rothschild. It will be at 6:30 p.m. at the Boston University Law Auditorium. If you're interested in attending, you can RSV to mlsa.event@gmail.com. Este martes, el 3 de marzo, habrá un acontecimiento llamado Gaza, más allá de los titulares, incluyendo oradores Noam Chomsky, Duncan Kennedy y Elise Rothschild. Va a comenzar a las 6:30 de la noche en la Law Auditorium de la Universidad de Boston. Si quieres ir, puedes mandar un email a mlsa.event@gmail.com. MIT Casino Rueda will be having a salsa workshop on this Sunday, March 1st. Lessons will be from noon to 2 p.m., and there will be social dancing from 2 to 3 p.m. It will be in Lobdell on the second floor of the MIT Student Center, Building W20. MIT Casino Rueda va a presentar un taller de salsa este domingo, el 1 de marzo. Las lecciones serán del mediodía hasta las 2 de la tarde. Y el baile social será de las 2 hasta las 3 de la tarde. va a estar en Labdell, en el primer piso de Student Center de MIT, edificio W20. And those are all the announcements we have, and I apologize for my mangled Spanish. Hopefully my Spanish will improve as Sperio continues.
Today is actually the first day that Mary has engineered the show. She just passed the on-the-air engineering test on Thursday, was it? Or on Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah. So it's awesome. We're really excited about it. Okay, so we are the local voice of our hemisphere.
WMBR Cambridge. And you can always call us at 617-253-8810 if you have comments. And we always encourage you to call us during your show as well if you have stuff that you would like to let people know about.
And we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not representing the WMBR, the Broadcasting Corporation, or the MIT. So we'll be returning next Friday with another amazing guest, and we'll be talking about his work in over IAP.
He went to Asia, and he did projects involving like solar energy and stuff like that, so he's really, really cool. His name is Scott, and he'll be telling us about his projects, and he's started up his own company doing this stuff now, so he's really been successful, and it'll be exciting to hear about the work he's done.
So we have really exciting shows coming up. We hope that we'll see you guys again next Friday.
Yeah, and we'll put on some music right now.
Yeah, the last song that we'll be listening to is called Nazare Pereira, and I actually know who sang it this time. It's by now I can't say it. It's Clarero de Lua. So I will be returning to you guys next week. Bye.
Vive sem amor, eu não vivo sem te ver. Quem chega na maré cheia é cantiga de bem querer. Quem chega na maré cheia é cantiga de bem querer. O sol vive sem amor, eu não vivo sem te ver. Quem chega na maré cheia é cantiga de bem querer. Quem chega na maré cheia é cantiga de bem querer. O bugari dá o cheiro, o biribá dá o gosto. O clarão da lua cheia é pouco pro que eu te gosto. O clarão da lua cheia é pouco pro que eu te gosto. O sol vive sem amor, eu não vivo sem te ver. Quem chega na maré cheia é cantiga de bem querer. Quem chega na maré cheia.